Hi.
My name is Alexandra Bennett, and I'm in the Griffith Lab at Cornell University, and I'm going to talk to you about anthocyanin content, quality, and concentration in cruciferous vegetables. So with publications like the Southampton 6 coming out relating ADHD rates in children to food additives, people are becoming aware of the risk with food additives. And so consumers are desiring healthier alternatives. So what we'd really like to do is make it easier for companies to switch over to these healthier, more natural alternatives. However, natural tends to be quite a bit more expensive than their artificial components. That's why companies go artificial. So our goal is to create a breeding program that makes cheap, easily accessible, high concentrations of anthocyanins. And we'd like to do this by assessing different genotypes, assessing what environment to grow these genotypes in, assessing what age to harvest our genotypes at, and assessing the localization of anthocyanins and thus what organs to harvest from these plants. First of all, what is an anthocyanin? Anthocyanins are phytochemicals produced in a variety of plant species and plant organs, and plants produce them for their own purposes, obviously. For example, they're produced in floral organs to attract pollinators. However, this attractiveness is really relatable to human purposes also. If you look to the left here, you can see a cabbage anthocyanin extraction that we did. And varying from pH 1 through 12, you can get a variety of really nice colors from red to purple to blue to green. And this is really applicable to the food industry. However, anthocyanins aren't just pretty. Anthocyanins are also very practical, both to plants and humans. For plants, essentially during periods of high light intensity, plants will produce high levels of anthocyanins to reflect back extra wavelengths and prevent the photosystems from becoming overexcited. However, if the photosystems do become overexcited, anthocyanins will act as antioxidants and electron sinks in order to protect the plant. But this antioxidant capability is actually really transferable to human purposes too. Anthocyanins are known as antioxidants for people, and so they're neuroprotective, anti-carcinogenic, and increase insulin sensitivity, and they can even pass the blood-brain barrier. So, you know, good for plants, good for us. So in order to select out the best genotype, we looked at several different market classes which we knew produced anthocyanins and were relatively cheap to grow. All possible genotypes that we looked at, or species that we looked at, were Brassica oracea, Brassica rapa, Brassica ginsea, and Raffinus stativus. Most of those are currently in the field as matures right now, and so hopefully I'll be presenting data on those at a later time. But today I'd like to show you some preliminary juvenile data that we have on the five different market classes: cabbage, kale, Brussels sprouts, mustard, and Chinese cabbage. And on the right here you can see the different accessions and cultivars that we looked at. And these are five different chromatograms from HPLC that we got from those five different market classes. They're very typical of their different market classes. You can see the first three, Red Express is a red cabbage, Red Boar is a red kale, and Rubine is a Brussels sprout. They're all the same species, so they have relatively same profiles and concentrations, and that wasn't very surprising being the same species. But if you look at Scarlet Frills and Red Mizuna, which is our mustard and Chinese cabbage, so ginsea and rapa, they have slightly different profiles, and if you look at the axis over here, they're actually much lower concentrations. So initially you'd think that these are worse because they're lower concentrations. However, it's really important to look at the cost-benefit sort of analysis here. They produce peaks that elute past the 30-minute mark, and according to the literature and with our protocol, essentially what that means is they're more likely to produce diacylated anthocyanins, and compared to mono or non-acylated anthocyanins, those are more stable, and companies like to have stable pigments. They don't want their anthocyanins breaking down in their products. So we did a lot of HPLC, but we really wanted to get a more holistic look at the anthocyanin distribution throughout our plants so we could really identify how environment affected this and what to harvest. And if you look at this figure here, what's very typical is that in leaf tissue, in the outer mesophyll and epithelial cells, you see the highest concentration of anthocyanins. However, there's no real pigmentation in the inner mesophyll cells. You're losing a lot of area that could be producing pigmentation. And this is true across all of our market classes. And within the stems of brassicole oracea and radish, you're also going to find anthocyanins. However, in our mustards and within our Chinese cabbage, that's pretty variable. What's really nice is that radish can produce anthocyanins in almost all of their organs, so floral, leaf, stem, and they actually have internal coloration possibilities within both hypocotyl and root, so they're really promising for a high concentration of anthocyanin purpose. To get another holistic view, we also did colorimetry because while HPLC can tell you the absorption spectrum, that doesn't really mean very much to a lot of companies. It's not really relatable. So if you look here, we looked at the colorimetry of several different accessions at pH 2, which tends to be pink, and pH 7, which tends to appear as blue. And we found that the accessions, even though they were all cyanidin-based, because this is all cabbage and cabbage is only cyanidin, still had variation in pigmentation at both pH 2 and pH 7 due to the different side groups on the anthocyanins, the glycosylations and acylations, which can cause copigmentation and variation. And if you really want to fine-tune the pigment that you get from your product, this is important. Colorimetry is also really important because it's well documented in the literature that over time anthocyanins break down. But what does this practically actually mean to companies? Essentially, what we found is that over time, anthocyanins turn to green, from a blue to green at a pH 7, and companies don't really want their blue products turning green because product quality is very closely related to color. And lastly, we would also like to, with our colorimetry, identify exactly the pigmentation of each peak and thus each anthocyanin compound so that we know that pigment and which peaks to select for in our breeding program. We also would really like to do some mass spec work because currently all of our anthocyanin assignments are very tentative, and mass spec can give us a more valid idea of that, which again isn't a huge deal in our brassicole oracea species as they're all cyanidin based and there is only that slight variation due to glycosylation and acylation. But in things like radish, which have much higher concentrations, so they're very promising, there's both pelargonin and cyanidin possibilities, and environment highly affects what peaks, ratio of peaks are being produced. So with radish, if you have both pelargonin and cyanidin, you're going to have issues with different ratios and thus an unreliable product, and companies don't like unreliability. And we'd like to select pelargonin or cyanidin only radish. So from all of this, what we really gathered is that cabbage is the best middle-of-the-road product. It has high levels of anthocyanins that have diacylation possibilities, which are stable, and it's simple enough that you can get something reliable. So we did a germplasm screening. We looked at 4 different seed banks, 12 different red cabbage cultivars, and 2 green cabbage controls. And we were able to, from the literature, identify 25 different peaks and look at their variation. You can see that the more anthocyanins produced, the more likely there was variation. However, this variation wasn't explained only by overall concentration. You can see that in, and I know that text is small and you cannot read those different accessions, but in accessions like BRA 770, there is a lower concentration of anthocyanin overall than other accessions. However, it still had the most diacylated anthocyanins, which shows that, you know, you could have very different profiles within different radish cultivars. And I just really want to show how far our breeding efforts can go with this slide. Here are the 4 top producing anthocyanin radishes currently on the market, and here's one of our breeding lines compared to this. These all have all been grown in the same environment and harvested at the same time, and just through visual phenotyping, we've been able to drastically increase not only the anthocyanin concentration, but even the size, which is impressive since higher anthocyan and cultivars tend to be smaller because anthocyanins are such a huge carbon sink. Lastly, I just want to cover how maturity affects anthocyanin concentration. Initially, we had really hoped that we could phenotype the juveniles and skip out on growing things in the field and save a ton of money. But as you can see, the juveniles do not reflect their mature counterparts overall. They tend to have lower concentrations and oftentimes completely different profiles, though sometimes they can even have higher concentrations than their mature counterparts. But as you can see here, they tend to have simpler profiles. They're missing a couple of peaks right here. And this can be both good or bad. It's bad because these three peaks here are monoacylated, so they're not that great, and they have higher concentrations of that, generally speaking. But it's nice because they have simpler profiles, so there's less variability and less unknown for companies to deal with. So I would like to thank the Griffiths Lab, Philip Griffiths, my PI, DGA, the postdoc who helps me a lot, and the Mansfield Lab for helping me with analytical chemistry, and Martin Goffinet for cytology. Any questions?
On your initial screening, why you didn't consider carrots?
Kale?
Carrots.
Carrots. Oh, so I actually have a good reason for that. Purple carrots, from what I've read in the literature, are only monoacylated, so that tends to be less stable than cabbage, which has a higher level of diacylation. But carrots are the current producer of anthocyanins as a food additive. So, good question.
Why do plants have a lower anthocyanin content at the younger stage?
So sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. A lot of times in non-red varieties, you're actually going to see high concentrations of anthocyanins in juveniles because they act as a photoprotectant before plants can really form a electron quenching method or anything like that. However, in the red cabbage that is, this has been artificially selected for years, we've turned off a lot of the environmental regulation of anthocyanins, and so they tend to have higher concentrations because of breeding efforts.
How would you go about making a production system for anthocyanins with something like cabbage or your turnip? What's the process? You would harvest them and dry them down and then do an extraction?
Yeah, so currently, we don't produce them for consumption purposes. When we make an extract, we aren't worried about killing people. So our purpose is we harvest, freeze dry, and then extract in acidified methanol, and we do a triple extraction, and that works really well. You get all the anthocyanins out. However, there's a few companies in China that actually do the extraction. They don't really tell us how they do that without it being dangerous, so that's a good question.
I'm most interested in water extraction since these compounds are water soluble.
Yes. Yeah, so
using alcohol or anything like that is much more expensive.
It's more expensive. And so that's another aspect that really needs to be addressed, is the whole extraction and processing of it, because red cabbage also has a lot of sulfur volatiles, and you don't really want your candy dyed with anthocyanins to taste like cabbage. Okay.
Thank you, Alexander.
Thank you.